Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Reunited and it feels so good. Scott Rintoul, Mick Nizar, as the intro said, it is Canucks Central. We want your contributions and they are already pouring in. I'm not surprised by that. First time, long time that we have done this, Mick. First time we've done this in the summer. I'm good, man. How are you doing? You rested? You healthy? You ready to go?
We both took a week off last week.
Yeah, we did.
Missed a bunch of stuff, but fired up. I don't plan on taking holidays till what? Like January? February? Who knows? I'm well rested, getting set for this play-in and hopefully playoffs.
Well, that's where you and I differ. I do plan on taking holidays between now and then, but that's a that's a different story for a different day, Vic.
I get that.
Yeah, you understand.
This is great. Like, it's exciting because, like, look, we took some time off away from you know you were doing your show and like we've been separated because there wasn't much to go off of. We're here, man. We made it. It's been trying since March to get to this stage, but everyone's in the bubble. This is it. It's real now.
Yeah, they are in the hubbles of Edmonton and Toronto right now. And the best news that we've heard all day, with all due respect to some of the pictures that have been tweeted out and sent out on Instagram, no positive tests COVID-19-wise in the NHL last week among the widespread testing that was conducted. That doesn't mean nobody's going to get it. That doesn't mean that there's somebody necessarily who's in the bubble who is asymptomatic or not showing a positive test right now. But that is extremely positive news. We always knew phase three was going to be a little more risky than phase four, Bick, which they enter this week. Great press release, especially given the juxtaposition as what has happened is happening, I should say, right now with Major League Baseball.
This is the point. Like, I understand that there were some positive tests here up until this point, but this is what the NHL wanted, right? No positive tests coming into the bubble. That's the perfect way that this works out. And they got what they wanted. And like, this is the thing I tried preaching all along. It's, you know, don't get too concerned until we like have your concerns, obviously, but don't be an alarmist until we get to this stage. And if you go into the bubble with zero tests, and you're right, asymptomatic, all of that, something can still flare up. But this gives the NHL the best platform to make this thing all work.
Yeah, you've got a chance now. Like, give yourself a chance. And their plan, once you get to where they are now, which is in Edmonton and Toronto, inside your protective hubbles, as I'm calling them, that is far less risky if you can get there than what Major League Baseball is trying to conduct, what Major League Soccer may try to conduct. Hey, with all due respect, what the NFL may have to do, because you're there. Nobody's leaving anymore. You're in a contained environment, which is very difficult to come by. So that's great news. Let's turn our attention to the Vancouver Canucks. And I said this on my show this morning. You could have predicted the exact same thing. Prior to leaving for your week off, if there was one topic you knew you could talk about and people would react coming back on Monday, July 27th, it was Jake Virtanen. And here we are. We are correct, because Jake Virtanen is being discussed, and whether or not he's going to be on that opening night roster come Sunday feels very much in debate. And if he does right now, Bick, it feels like he's going to be the 13th forward.
Well, here's the thing. It's the input has changed, right? Like, yes, we're still talking about Jake Virtanen, but a week ago it was Zach MacEwen was showing up in camp and looked exciting. And I think long term, that's a very good conversation. You know, I probably would entertain it here even in the short term, but when we talk about future cap issues and who can go out and who can stay in, like, that's an interesting conversation. In the short term, okay, MacEwen showed up in camp. He's in an interesting piece that can have some mobility up the lineup, but Jake Virtanen should be beating him out. Now you change the input, right? Take Zach MacEwen out, put Michael Ferland in. And that's a different conversation, both from, you know, what they've done so far in the league, their direct impact and how to play in the playoffs, what they get paid, all these sort of things. And because Michael Ferland has showed up and proven that he's so far okay, and you know, looks pretty interesting so far in camp. I heard Ian McIntyre use the term beast quite a few times. Then it becomes really interesting of the dynamics of a, okay, now do you have to fit Michael Ferland? Like, do you have to get Ferland in? And if so, where does that leave a guy like Jake Virtanen? Is it, I don't know if you can put him in that fourth line because you need penalty killers and you're not putting him out there on a penalty kill. So it does look like it's trending towards he's one of those 13 forwards.
So you and I can agree. You and I can agree on that, that we're talking about a different discussion than that fourth line winger. There have been a couple who have quibbled with that suggestion, but we know how Travis Green is going to construct this roster, and the way you outlined it is exactly right. He wants that to be a defensive zone matchup line. He wants it to include penalty killers, and that is why that spot seemingly comes down to Brandon Sutter or Louis Erickson on that wing alongside Jay Beagle and Tyler Mott. We can agree on that, right?
Yeah, and look, this is two different conversations. Like, is Jake Virtanen one of the 12 best forwards on this team? Yes. Is he, like, is there the role for him? That's the question. It's the same Sven Berchi question that we tried answering, but at a different moment in the season and a different position, but also perhaps a different talent as well. So if you just put the 12 best players on the ice, then Jake Virtanen's among the 12. He might be 11, but he's among the 12. It's determining how you make the best team, though. That's the struggle Travis Green's having.
Absolutely. So we can agree then that the three names you mentioned are the ones that are vying for that spot right now on the third line. Antoine Roussel is going to start this playoff series. Adam Gaudette is going to start this playoff series. Who lines up alongside beside them? Is it Michael Ferland? Is it Jake Virtanen? Is it Zach MacEwen? And get your texts in right now, 650-650. To me, the answer, based on the evidence, is fairly obvious. Where this really would have become a question, and hey, I love the Zach MacEwen story, and you're right. That feels like a future conversation as opposed to a right now conversation. If Zach MacEwen would have outplayed Ferland and who had maybe had some more health issues during this camp, if he had outplayed him and he had outplayed Virtanen substantially, okay, now we've got an interesting discussion. But Ferland's been great. Ferland, in the second week, by everybody's account, looked fantastic. He's the guy with the resume. He's the guy with the evidence on his side that he's done it at this time of year, and he is outperforming the other people in the competition. Based on all of that, Bic, if there are no health concerns, and at this point it would appear there are not, the answer is fairly obvious who's going to start there.
He was brought in literally for this scenario. Like, wow, what a great playoff performer. What a S-disturber. What a wrecking ball that come the tough time of the year. And what phrase do we hear from Travis Green? Do we always hear? It's, you know, tough players to play against. And when it's winning time, well, it's winning time. And if you want that style of player who can crash and bang, and also, you know, not just recklessly do it, knows how to protect the puck, has a great NHL shot. And we saw in a few scrimmage highlights, and look, I know it's only scrimmage, but you're looking for traits more so than anything. His hands are fine. Like, he's got some quick hands around the net. We saw in his goal. If he's moving fine and feels like he's recovering fine from this, you know, stress of, you know, high-intensity action that he hasn't had to deal with, and if he's recovering from all that fine, and physically he's fine, it's a really encouraging development. Like, this is found money for the Canucks that Michael Ferland was able to do this. Remember, yeah, they went out and got Tyler Toffoli because Ferland, Besser were all out. Now Toffoli and Besser are both healthy. You know, Ferland was the plan in the top six. They don't have that anymore because they've got Toffoli and Besser. So he's in. I think that's the lock with Gaudette and Roussel. Yeah. And think of that wing pairing. Like, that's fun.
Oh, yeah. And what have we heard about Adam Gaudette from Travis Green's own mouth? We've all watched him play. What has Travis Green said from day one this year? Adam Gaudette is like a dog on a bone. He gets after it out there. Well, that's the personality of this line right now. And this, again, is where Ferland wins this conversation right now. And look, Ferland, what's the question? The question is about his health. The question about Jake, on the other hand, is, hey, can he bring what is the top end of Jake Virtanen consistently? That's what you're hoping for. With Michael Ferland, you're hoping he stays healthy because you know what you're going to get if he does.
For sure, yeah. The point that you mentioned of, you know, we've seen the evidence of him in the playoffs, right? There is no projection required. And when you're building on a roster, And I know we have this conversation a lot about, okay, what happens on the left side of the defense moving forward? Hughes is obviously the staple, but you know, a lot of people got excited for Jack Rathbone. And will he make the team next year? You can't build your team based on projections, because not all of them are going to come through. I'm excited for Jack Rathbone. I'm not giving him the third pairing spot immediately. You might want to go acquire someone. And if he beats out, or if Jordy Ben sticks around, right, and Jack Rathbone beats out Jordy Ben, then you've got an interesting conversation on your hands. What can you do with Jordy Ben and all that? But you don't build things around projections. So Jake Virtanen playing in this playoff role that a lot of people that still have their stock in him, one of the key arguments is, look, he's got the type of body, he hits in a certain way that when he's engaged in the playoffs, that's really going to matter. We know that about Michael Ferland, though. Like, the Canucks are paying for that confirmation by giving him the contract that they did at the price tag that they gave it to him. 3.5, look, it's not what Elias Pettersson is going to make in a couple of years, but it's still a substantial chunk of change, and there's an expectation he plays a certain way, and he brings that immediately.
And you have to separate the micro from the macro. The micro is, in the here and now, going into this qualifying series against the Minnesota Wild, who gives the Canucks the best chance in that spot to win that series? And right now, it's Michael Ferland. But there are going to be some contractual decisions made in this offseason. There are going to be players that are on this roster in this series right now that aren't going to be here. This isn't to say that the Canucks are out on Jake Virtanen or that it's never going to work. That is a completely different discussion moving forward, Bick.
That's like my own opinion, right? It's one of those things of, and I've long felt this way when it comes to Jake, that I don't know if he's ever going to fulfill the image that people expect him to be. They expect this Bertuzian power forward, but they're very different. And I do look at Jake sometimes and I think biomechanically, he is just not that guy, right? He's very straight line speed. Bertuzzi, you can go watch all the old clips. We all have those memories in our heads of when he can sink the hips, get low. He's 6'4", man. And he's getting below like 6 feet, getting underneath the defender and able to, you know, work his way to the net because he's got the inside shoulder and the inside shoulder, and he's able to just drag a guy towards the net through sheer power and balance because he's got the flexibility in his hips to do so, to get low like that. When do we ever see Jake Virtanen like fundamentally able to get low on a guy that's his size or smaller? He doesn't, because I don't think the hips dexterity is not there to sink his hips and drive. It's usually on guys that are his size or bigger, and he can kind of power his way through them. But guess what? You go up against a bigger player. The smaller guys at this level have elite agility and mobility, are able to navigate around him and poke the puck for it. We see that more often than the classic power forward, dip the shoulder, drag the puck to the net. We just don't see that with Jake ever, because I just don't think he has it in him.
I want a Twitter bio change for you, one that includes the term purveyor of hip dexterity.
Look, man, I love athletic, like sports science, love that stuff. And we wax about how great Quinn Hughes is on his edges. You know what helps? Ankle flexion and hip dexterity, all that stuff matters. And I just don't see the flexibility in Jake's game to do that.
Lots of comments coming in. 650, 650, if you want in on the conversation. Torgy and Langley says, it's a no-brainer for me. If Ferland looks good, feels good on Wednesday, he's in for game one. He has the makeup to be a real difference maker. He's proven it before the other two guys. I don't have that confidence in. Vikingstad says, use Virtanen as the first guy to come in when there's an injury. That makes sense. It's like having a good bench player. Also would expect he'd come in fairly energized. Those are both two very good points, Bick.
For sure. And I want to get to this one other text here, unsigned. One good hit given or taken, and Ferland would be out. Look, I agree. Like, there's concern here. I think... while the media is having this conversation of, look how good he looks. He's real. Like, he's back to where he is. There's some reticence on behalf of the fan base, I think, to jump 2 feet in, because they've seen this movie before. They've seen, like, hey, we kind of got excited. We were concerned about him coming into the season, and sure enough, he got his concussion. And he was rushed back, and sure enough, he got his concussion. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I think that's how the fan base kind of feels about this.
But it's fair. And I said it earlier in the show, Michael Ferland, based on what we've watched over the last number of years, or pardon me, it was certainly this year, but even the last couple, believe it when you see it. And that's not me trying to diminish it. That is a very legitimate concern, because he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And we all hope he's able to, more so for the person, Bic, than for the player. But yes, Michael Ferland has to prove that he can get through multiple NHL games, especially at this intensity, from a physical point of view. There's another guy you and I wanted to discuss, and there's some texts coming in about him right now. I threw this question out, and I think it's one we can run with as a theme this week. It doesn't have to just be answered today. And that is, who's a Canuck who can change your mind this summer? Like, nobody's going to change their mind about Pettersson or Hughes. You know what you have. They could have disappointing qualifying rounds, and you still would not be down on those players. And there are other guys that are in the other category that they could play extremely well, and that player might not change your mind. Like, the fan base, for example, Bic, they're down on Brandon Sutter. He could be great in the playoffs, and they would never feel good about his contract. It would simply be, hey, that's awesome. Move him now. Somebody else will want him. Like, there are certain players that don't qualify for fans to change their mind on. But there's a bunch of other guys that do qualify, and one of them is on this roster, and maybe unexpectedly on this roster. And doesn't look like he's going to suit up anytime soon, but at least he's an option, and that is Olli Juolevi. Some text coming in. Steve from New West. Juolevi can change my mind. If he slots in down the line due to injuries and has a solid showing, it would be an amazing new piece to have that most people gave up on. What is your level of surprise that Olli Juolevi played his way into this 31-player roster?
Fairly high. Credit to him, right? And not that I didn't think he had the skill to be among the 30 best players the Canucks have. It just, where is he physically, right? The main concern we've had is, he's had so many injuries. What's his mobility? I never questioned, like, where his hands were, how he processes the games. Like, that's why he was drafted. His processing speed felt like was at an elite level, right? And his passing ability, he's able to make the first pass. He's able to understand where his pressures are coming from. But physically, how do you hold up? And if he showed up that he was, finally, this time off, was able to recover at a rate where, thank goodness, I guess the virus that saved his career, that, he didn't have to force his way back in. He didn't have to rush anything. If he was able to do that, that's such a huge bonus for not even just for the Canucks, for him. Like, I think we overlook sometimes the mental anguish repeated injuries have on athletes. It's discouraging to try to pick yourself up off the mat over and over and over again, that maybe you just get discouraged from ever wanting to come back. And for him to get this opportunity and maximize it to show that, hey, I've got this, I can't imagine how good that feels for himself.
No question. Brandon and Coquitlam also chimes in. The Canuck that could change my mind the most this summer is Olli Juolevi. If he can become a 6 or 7 D-man, that would at least be a win, as I've had him written off for quite a while now. And again, micro compared to macro. If Olli Juolevi finds his way into this tournament somehow, some way, it's another good sign. But the fact that he at least played his way into this conversation, Bic, does allow you as a Canucks fan to look forward and start to project, okay, what does the competition start to look like come November and looking at next season? Obviously, we don't want to put the cart ahead of the horse, but this is how fans think, and they do have to think about this. It's especially with their prospects. You talked about Jack Rathbone. Well, all of a sudden, here's another player who maybe felt like he was out of the conversation, who's worked his way back into it.
Yeah, for sure. And I've kind of advocated for when we had the cap discussions of, like, I think there is a trade that you could use from your forward group to go get a defenseman. And somebody asked me, okay, right side or left side defenseman? And to be honest, I don't think it matters. Yes, we've had the conversation about walking away from Chris Tanev and whatnot, so immediately, right side defenseman works. But look at the left side defenseman. It's Hughes is your only pillar there. Adler's got 1 year left. Yes, we're excited about Rathbone, but you don't build out the projection. So if you went out and acquired a left side D-man for a short-term stopgap after Adler, kind of, let's see how that goes. I think there's viability in wanting to acquire a left-handed D-man. However, if Rathbone and Juolevi both kind of start pushing each other, and we see that maybe the Canucks want to lean into one of those guys a bit, it might save themselves from themselves to say, hey, we got two chances now to get a guy, a depth, a left-sided D-man for 1 year, and we can see how that works rather than kind of overspending and putting ourselves in a bad spot. This is good news today that Juolevi's impressing, that they can consider him on the roster for next year. Big picture, like, it's still like they're still not going to get the return on their investment at all. They gave up a very high pick for him. They drafted him at a very high spot. The expectation was surefire top four D-man. That's still a question mark, but from where they are today, you can get something positive out of him.
Well, and the other wild card in that conversation, not that he himself is a wild card, but Quinn Hughes, what have we talked about ever since they drafted him and we watched this young man develop prior to getting to the NHL? Well, Quinn Hughes is the type of guy that if you ended up with too much on one side, you could flip him over to play right side D. Like, there's a guy who's not going to have any issue playing on the other side. I'm not moving him today, Bick, but he does give them that flexibility on the back end.
Yes, and it, you know, that kind of, I guess, goes to the conversation of if you wanted to go big on a left side of D-man, it gives you the flexibility. If you wanted to kind of redo a Tyler Myers deal, maybe a bit less because they don't have the money for a left side of D-man, and you wanted to improve the right side, Quinn Hughes, because of his mobility, because of his edge work, because of his processing speed, he's able to flip sides. And you know, Jordy Benn flips sides to a much lesser degree, but it did seem like he was more comfortable on the right side too.
Texts continue to pour in. So many people
flooded
saying, yeah,
today. I love it.
I'm one of those that had written off Ole Ylevi, so count me in. This other one comes in from Dave in North Burnaby. If Ferland is on his game and up to speed, the Canucks had a more proven and formidable dynamic to be reckoned with by their opponents. It really does change the nature of that third line, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Especially when you consider like the bottom two lines, the Canucks struggled puck possession-wise. Gaudette especially, right? Just not at the stage in his career where he's so sound defensively. The bar for him is to get to basically like average defensively, and then you'll see the offensive side of his game flourish. But right now, gives up a lot of scoring chances, and that line has problems because they've had a rotating group of players. Roussel, obviously, not fully up to health. Like, there's a guy that's very exciting to see now that he's fully recovered from his knee injury in this play-in series or playoffs. You know, is he fully up? Is he fully recovered now? If he is, and a guy like Ferland plays with them, like that's two defensively sound wingers to go with Adam Gaudette, and suddenly that's a huge improvement because, you know, Jake, while he's very exciting offensively, defense has some issues. He and Gaudette together is a very high risk line, high risk, high reward. They can score for sure, but they're going to be in their own end a lot.
Well, we're going to continue to look forward to this series and start to get into the nuts and bolts of it as this week continues. But one of the names we've heard ever since we knew this was going to be the matchup, Marcus Foligno. Man, Canucks fans are going to hate that guy. All of a sudden, you got a couple of guys on the Canucks third line that Minnesota Wild fans are going to hate. If Michael Ferland's healthy and ready to go, and Antoine Roussel is obviously up to the speed he was displaying just prior to the NHL pause. Time for our quick pause, but when we return, a name I didn't think I would hear when I said which Canuck could change your mind, and the bizarre drama unfolding in the desert. It's all straight ahead on your home of Canucks hockey, Sportsnet 650.
More of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Have they incorporated this music into the Hubble? I know they are doing the goal songs for the respective teams that are there. They've got that. Do they have the winning songs for the end of teams? Do we know that, Bick? Do we have confirmation on whether or not the Canucks win a game against the Wild in Edmonton and they play I'm Still Standing?
I believe they do. I saw a clip from Steve Mayer, who's the NHL like head of entertainment and all that. I think they're bringing in all the goal songs and all that sort of stuff. So I believe they will have everything on cue that the teams require, and to make it as you know, the transition as smooth as possible.
I've got to say, the arenas, the way they've laid them out, they look great. They look fantastic.
They look really good. And look, it's tough. Pulling this off and making it a visually interesting product. I think the NBA has done a great job with all these new camera angles and whatnot. Like, there's some courtside camera angles that look amazing. Excited to see what the NHL does for that as well.
Yeah, same here. And I am interested to know, and there's no way of knowing until we see it, but I'm interested to know that 2 months from now, assuming this goes off and the Stanley Cup gets awarded, what aspect of the broadcast are we going to look at and say, well, they got to keep that. I can't go back, man. I love that so much that they have to keep that as part of the presentation that I want to see on my screen from here on in. I'm really curious about that. How about you?
Yeah. The visual aspect is going to be really interesting. I do think, like, okay, I saw, like, the TV screens and, you know, what they're going to have next to it or, like, next to the ice. I am curious how that translates to the broadcast, though. Right?
Well, like, yes, of course.
It looks great visually from a picture to be inside the arena. How is that going to relate to us when we see it on the screen? That part I'm interested in.
Yeah, I'm interested in that as well. And I did outline this one scenario, and I don't know if it'll happen. But with those screens and what they've got going on there, and I'm assuming some of them will have live action on them or not just logos the entire time that they're up there. Like, will they have the live running screen up there so that, like, you know, in the NFL, when a guy breaks away on a long run, he looks up at the screen to see how close the guy is behind him. If a guy gets a breakaway from his own blue line, will he be able to look up and go, okay, I've got time here?
No, man, that would be too distracting, wouldn't it? To have,
you would think so.
I think that'd be too distracting for the players. I think they're just going to be the logos, and like it should just be a static screen. Although I guess it would go to the cutaways for fans. Right? How else are they going to incorporate visuals from the fans, right? Because they're asking fans to record stuff.
Yeah, you probably saw some of the MLS's back stuff and above the nets, they have like Whitecaps fan up there, and he looks like this overlord who is, you know, I saw somebody, this wasn't my original thought, but somebody said, man, I love the fact that they put a fan back there and he looks like he's going to demand $100 billion or he's going to blow up New York. Like, that's kind of what it looks like with this giant fan over these what appear to be miniature players. Maybe that's the kind of look we're going to see from the NHL in these in-arena broadcasts.
I'm excited for it, though.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, this is more along, and I'll move on just after this, but more of it's the camera angles and some of the things they're going to present visually on the screen, because they're not going to have cutaways to fans like we normally do. So what are they going to present to us with camera angles that they now have the ability to use, or as some of those things other than replays that we're going to see on our screens that we go, that is awesome, man. I want that moving forward. I mean, I could see it where there's such a great camera angle that gets discovered during this that they go, you know what? I know we lose a few seats in a prime section, but man, that makes the broadcast so much better for our fans.
Well, they've tinkered with the power play camera, which I'm not a huge fan of. The one that I've been wanting, and when we talked to a couple of players, and it's like, oh, I'm not sure how valuable that would be. In football, they've got like the all 22 camera where you can see every single player. We don't see like an all 12 camera where you have an angle behind the ice and you can see the whole play develop. And anytime I talk to any player, they're just like, oh, no, I don't think that would be useful, because they all seem to like the side angle, like the TV copy, basically. And I think that would be interesting. Like, whether it's a top-down one that looks down or behind the net, that's like, I guess, from the second level, that to me is one that would be interesting. But I try asking players about that all the time, and I would say like 95% have said, no, just the regular side-to-side is more valuable.
I'm curious about a lot of stuff, as are you, our Canucks fan. 650-650, if you want in this conversation, Scott Rintoul and Bick Nizar with you on Canucks Central as we count you down to the return of play. Canucks in action Wednesday night. You will hear all of it here on Sportsnet 650. We'll have your pregame, your game, and your postgame as well. And then, of course, things get going for real on Sunday for the Vancouver Canucks. And there will be more broadcast sprinkled in. We don't have everything nailed down as to what other games will be airing on Sportsnet 650, but there will be other games as the qualifiers and the playoffs continue that you will hear on your home of hockey, Sportsnet 650. There are more texts rolling in, Bick, and I did say, who's a Canuck who could change your mind over the course of this summer? This one was a little surprising to me because I don't think anyone's mind is going to be changed on him. Ben in Poco says, the Canuck that can most change my mind is Markstrom if he doesn't perform highly. Do you think any minds can be changed on Jacob Markstrom?
I think there's a sentiment of that as well, because I saw Gordy Locke also tweet in, Markstrom can win me over. He's still in the camp of letting him go if he gets too pricey. But if he performs to such a stage, like, I think the $6 million that we're talking about as of today, wildly inaccurate, right? I think that's a hopeful number from the Jacob Markstrom camp, and they should ask for that, but the realistic number is probably a bit lower. But if he performs and they go to the third round, Stanley Cup final, then that becomes a very realistic target that he could get $6+ million. But at that stage, are fans willing to say, hey, look, this guy did it. He's the guy. He's real. Let's commit that dollars to him. I understand that aspect of it. The reason it's wrong, though, is you're banking all your faith on Thatcher Demko. And I just don't think the Canucks organizationally are in a timeline where they can do that.
They could go to the free agent market. They could most certainly go and do that because there'll be other guys available.
Sure, but your main guy is going to be Thatcher Demko, right? If you get another 1B, basically, is what we're talking about.
Yeah, maybe. But again, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but let's throw the name Robin Lehner out there. Well, if Robin Lehner is available at what you consider a bargain price, would you go get him? And would Thatcher Demko be ahead of him?
Okay, fair, but we're still talking about two guys who should be getting a certain standard of money.
Yes, and so this is why I think Markstrom isn't a guy who's going to change minds. So what Ben's text relies on is Markstrom performing poorly. If Markstrom performs poorly, are the Canucks getting past the qualifier with poor goaltending or average goaltending?
No.
Probably not, right?
No.
They're just not constructed that way. They don't have to have steal a game goaltending every single night, but they're not constructed in such a way that they're going to win a lot of 6-5 hockey games against Minnesota, and especially the way Minnesota plays. So they're bounced in the qualifier. What happens if they get bounced in the qualifier and Markstrom's not at his best? What are most people going to say? Well, we never seen anything like this. The guy was off for 4 months and he just didn't get up to speed right away within a week. But we've seen a season and a half where he's been spectacular. I'm not going to let 1 week determine what I think about Jacob Markstrom. That's why I don't think a lot of people will change their minds on him.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's more about the guys that we have regular conversations about, right? It's Markstrom's kind of confirmed a certain status that when we have a resumption of regular season play, a normal season, we expect a certain standard that he'll get back to. The guys you can change your mind on are, okay, who can actually go further and who can, stay where they are? Like Jake Vertanen. Like I'm open to having my mind changed on Jake Vertanen.
Yes.
Absolutely. Like I think Tyler Myers is a guy who can change opinions for people. I think Bo Horvat's a guy. I think there's a lot of people that don't trust Bo Horvat defensively. If he shows up and shuts down the Eric Staal line, shuts down the next line, I think that's really interesting to look at and say, okay, maybe he does change my mind. He is a responsible second line center. I think that's valid. I think I'm kind of with you with Olli Juolevi of if he even gets games, to be honest, but if he shows that he can play, like that's a guy you can change my mind on.
Michael Ferland, for a lot of people, is going to be a guy who can change their minds because right now, based on the texts we've received, and they are fair, there is a lot of disbelief that Michael Ferland can stay healthy. If Michael Ferland is healthy, if he's impactful, if the Canucks put together a little bit of a run and Ferland plays through that at the highest intensity of the year, he's a guy who could change some minds. How about this one? This surprised me a little, but it comes in from Eric. I think it's an interesting suggestion. Brock Besser can change my mind. I think he has the ability to be a star. But even though he has grown, he has not shown the star power since his rookie season. The qualifying round, in my opinion, is the time for him to shine again and show us he's an elite sniper when the pressure is on. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, that makes sense. You know what's fascinating about Brock Besser? I was thinking about this last week while I was on holiday. Because, yeah, of course, I still think about the team. I agree that Brock Besser is a star. But I'm not sure if he's a star player. Is that even fair to say that there is a distinction between the two?
I understand exactly what you're talking about.
Like he's got a star aura to him. I can't explain it, but he's not a franchise winger, right? I think he's a first line winger. He can be that, but I don't know if he's a franchise winger. But you talk to Brock and you see him interact with the players. He's got that star element to him, but I'm just not sure if he's a star player. It's kind of weird.
And what you're getting at is that his marketability is actually higher than his production or his status within the scope of the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that right now.
I'm a big fan of his game. I think there's a lot of progression, and I would have given him a long-term contract because, you know, he's the type of player I would want to take a bet on. And so I think he's going to develop even further. I think he's improved a lot this year. I know people wanted goals, but I thought he improved defensively, improved his playmaking, and we've seen him show up a bit in these scrimmages. With some playmaking ability, with some nice passes on some assists. And also, you know, he's got that new stick that everyone's really excited about. The players are chirping him about. But if he shows that he's got that element where a stick helped him, or he's finally feeling fully healthy because of this time off, that's a luxury he hasn't had either, just a regular offseason. And if we get the best version of Brock Besser, I think it's open to the conversation of, yeah, you can change my mind on him.
Bick Nizar, Scott Rinto, this is Canuck Central as we kick off the week of the NHL's return to play. A guy that won't be in Edmonton, surprising to a lot of us, is John Chyka. This story is bizarre and has taken many twists and turns. And before Bick and I dive into it, here's the latest from Elliot Friedman, who was on Hockey Central at noon today, describing how we got to the place where the only thing that John Chyka and the Coyotes can agree on is that he no longer works there.
Well, I think it's like a bad divorce, right, Jeff? There's one party says one thing and one party says the other. What facts are not in dispute is that sometime during the pandemic, within the last 4 to 6 weeks, another NHL team reached out to Arizona to ask for permission to speak to Chyka. Initially, that permission was denied by Alex Morello Jr., Alex Morello, the owner of the Coyotes. And then everything kind of veers. The Coyotes' position is that Chyka came and said, there's no harm in talking. And besides, maybe we can pick this team's brain and get some information that we can use as an organization. And they relented. And then they were blown away by the fact that he suddenly wanted to leave for a different situation. And they didn't want it to happen. And the other version I've gotten is that Arizona granted permission. It sounds like the other side is, I have no confirmation on this, Jeff, but mm-hmm. One thing I've heard from people who know Chyka is that everything is in writing and they can document everything in terms of what he was allowed and not allowed to do. And it was simply a situation where another team made him an offer he couldn't refuse and he wanted to accept it. And it came to a head, obviously, this weekend. I think, from what I can tell, Chyka wanted to negotiate an exit. He would stay through the playoffs and then leave after. And the organization was saying, no, you're under contract to us, and we don't want to talk about that. We'll talk about everything after the season, and we're not willing to negotiate an exit now. And that's kind of where it fell apart. And as I wrote yesterday, the Coyotes are going to ask the commissioner to adjudicate this.
I've never seen anything like this, Bick. I've never seen a press release come out from the team saying this guy quit on us. He quit at the wrong time of the year, and we're going to get a judge. That's what we're going to do. This is bizarre. We've seen people leave. We've seen people get expelled at seemingly odd times. I've never seen it go down quite like this. In fact, the only thing racking my brain that I could sort of equate it to was when Nick Saban just kind of quit on the Dolphins at the end of that season,
right,
in 2007, I guess it was, and went to Alabama, and he just kind of quit. But even that's
there's
not
like a
quite
Bobby
the
Petrino
same.
One where he quit on Louisville, right?
Like, yeah.
There are a couple of things.
But this is a GM.
Yeah, this is so bizarre. And when you hear Elliot explain it, okay, you know when we talk about like, oh, this is a win-win situation, both sides can profit, or you know, this side's the loser, this side's the winner. When you hear Elliot explain it, it's hard not to say, hey, both sides are losers in this scenario. Like, it's kind of Arizona's fault for opening the door to, like, you're allowed to deny permission to other teams. That's a thing. And if you open the door to allow someone to explore opportunities, don't be surprised if someone gives them a Godfather offer and they're like, hey man, I'm so impressed, I have to take this opportunity. You let the snake into the hen house. What are you so mad about? And John Chyka, look, I understand that there's some some, you know, perhaps misconception of what he is at times, or misperception. But did you act in good faith? And I think that's fair for from both sides to look at this. But there's no winners in this situation. They both look foolish.
If we're going to play along with the divorce analogy, this is like, hey, you've got what appears to be a happy marriage, and the one party says, someone's asking me if I would go on a date for coffee, but I'm married. Should I go? And the other side going, well, no, I don't think you should go. Going, yeah, I mean, whatever, I shouldn't go, but I mean, it would just be coffee. Okay, you know what? Why don't you go for coffee? You go ahead. You go have dinner. Go ahead. No big deal. And then coming back and going, you know what? That went really well. I went out. What? We thought you were just going for coffee. Man, I understand why both sides are reacting the way they are. I've just never seen it play out this way. And again, it feels like the owner feels like he was completely betrayed. Chaika is part of the reason the guy bought the team in the first place, thought they were in a really good spot, and then finds out, man, sorry, that they just have something you can't quite offer. I'm not going to play that out to the divorce analogy, Bick, but you can use your imagination.
Yeah, for sure. It's it's bizarre, but I guess we just have to wait now. Like, is this a legal issue that we just have to wait and see what happens?
Well, they're asking for Bettman or maybe someone else to adjudicate this, and Bettman's a lawyer, and it's, again, just reading between the lines here and reading what Friedman wrote in 31 Thoughts today, think what you want about John Chaika as a GM. He seems to be pretty buttoned down when it comes to having his contracts in order and his business dealings in order.
Mm-hmm.
Feels to me like he knew he had a legal out here.
And if he does, then, okay, hands off to him. But it's the timing of this, obviously, is also a thing that the Coyotes are annoyed about, and we saw the release. Think of the timing from the league's office point of view, right? Like, is Gary Bettman really interested in solving the Arizona Coyotes issue right now when they're trying to pull off phase four?
Nope.
So, yeah, I can't imagine the Coyotes are going to jump a line here.
This is where I turn things over to you, because I don't know if John Chaika and the Arizona Coyotes situation can be worked into this week's game of takes, but I will let you conduct the business here, my friend.
It's the most exciting new game on Sportsnet 650. There are hundreds who have applied to get in. Only one person a week gets to challenge he or she who sits atop the composite throne. It was Sean Butler on top of the throne last week. He was challenged by the alien Pope. Yes, he who represents the Church of Pedersen. And we asked you, give us your best Minnesota Wild smack talk. If you want to go for the city of Minnesota, go ahead. We post them online, you vote for it, and you determined that the alien Pope is your new leader, who now sits atop the composite throne. And if I'm not mistaken, we might have the alien Pope on the line here?
Correct.
It does make sense that I would be leading all of you into the play-in situation that we have here as I follow along the steps of the majestic Deaky Petey.
So you've got a church, right? So is it now a new thing? Like, your following is going to follow you into this? And I guess the question is, how excited for you are for the series are you?
Oh, I am so excited for hockey's return, and this series is just the our little world of it. But I listened to the Canucks scrimmages, Batch doing those calls on the scrimmages. I mean, that's how desperate I am for hockey. So it's very exciting that it's back, and I can't wait to chirp the Wild a little bit more and do a little bit of hexing on their goaltending and get some wins and move on to the playoffs for the first time in too long.
What's the biggest concern you have going into the series?
Oh, biggest concern, the unknowns. There are quite a few unknowns that we have. So there's just, we know what we have in Pedersen. We know what we have in Toffoli. We should know what we have in Markstrom. But there are those unknown factors where if they come in and they do exceed their expectations, or at least present themselves in a way that that meets it, for depending on the person you're talking to, I think that we could then advance a lot further. But if those unknowns go in the other direction and we don't, it's going to be a little bit more challenging for us. We'll end up having to rely heavily on the people that we know are going to be there consistently, and the ones that aren't are just, they may drag us back. So yeah, it's basically, my biggest concern is just with the unknown factors that we have in play. And I'm really hoping everyone, and it looks like everyone has been putting all of it into it. So I'm excited to see them back on the ice.
Well, what is known is that you sit atop the composite throne. Congratulations, Alien Pope, on your victory. Perhaps that is an omen that Pettersson will lead the Canucks past the Minnesota Wild. Congratulations, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's good to hear from you again, Rintoul, and you, Bick. Best of luck to you guys, and may PD shine holy red lights all over you.
Yeah, I think that would be a 100% poll question if we put that out there. Petey, shining red lights over all of Canuck Nation. Are you in favor? Yes, everyone would agree. Bick, this hour went fast and furious, buddy, and based on the amount of response, just to go back to the phone call, people are pretty fired up for the return of hockey, man. Based on the amount of text messages we had just today, and we haven't even seen an exhibition game yet, people are just salivating at this right now.
Oh my God, we're 2 days away from an exhibition game. Hyped. So exciting. Again, like, the only way I can say it is we made it. Look, there's a lot of struggles to get to this stage, and I hope everyone's been well themselves, you know, physically, emotionally, your family. I hope everything's gone well. But we're here. Hockey is back, and it's a small piece to a resumption of normalcy.
Absolutely. I'm in such a good mood. I'm going to give Leaf hater Steve his wish. And yes, I will, for you, wish your wife a happy 29th anniversary, Steve. Congratulations on your extended marriage. Hopefully it survives all of these hockey games that you are going to be watching over the course of the next little while. Hey, we're shuffling the deck this week. Reach Deep is doing the morning show, which means Sportsnet Today takes over next. Bick, you are a half of it, and excited to welcome Katie Caldwell to the fray here. It should be a fantastic show. Look forward to listening to you two together. You and I will reconvene tomorrow at noon. Have a great show, buddy.
I'm psyched, man. Can't wait.
Should be great. Don't change it. You've got it on the home of Canucks hockey. Big shout out to Dom Stramatti, who is in producing Canucks Central. Scott Rintoul's show returns tomorrow at 9 a.m., but it's Bick Nizar. It's Katie Caldwell. They're up next right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.